Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Hello and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast. I'm Daniel Prue, and joining me here are my fellow Marooners. We've got the Captain of Industry, Darren Moser, and Captain America, Philip Gilfus. How are you guys doing today?
I am doing super and star-spangled.
Nice.
And I have categorized all of my industries into five subgenres.
Now, are you more of a sheep industry or red brick industry?
I'm in the latinum industry, so I just, and keeping wheels turning, that is very important, here on City Alpha 3.
Guess what? I found a way, so, you know, we've talked about it once or twice on the show, but I don't mention it often because there's not a lot of intersection between, I host another podcast and this one, and in the other podcast I play video games, essentially.
Yeah, there's no Star Trek video games.
Well, not that there's none, but there certainly haven't been many in recent years. So I actually have just restarted playing through the Star Trek video game that took place. It came out right before Into Darkness. In fact, the Canadian version of the game came with a coupon for a movie ticket for Into Darkness. But it takes place between the 09 reboot and Into Darkness. And there's this alternate, I don't even want to say it's alternate because I don't know that it's canon, but it's a story that takes place between these two movies where Kirk and Spock fight the Gorn, essentially. Mm-hmm. And we actually get not only do you get to see New Vulcan, which is referenced in the movies, but you actually go to New Vulcan, and there's a whole bunch of story elements like weaved throughout the whole thing. It's a terrible game. It is a terrible game. But it's an interesting premise. So this is kind of how I've been reliving my Trek fandom for this past week or so. It's very interesting. Again, I'd love to go in more in depth on it sometime, and I will once I replay it completely. It's not that the story's awful or anything like that. It's just the game is terrible. I mean, glitches all over the place, and it's essentially just Kirk and Spock shooting a bunch of stuff for the whole game. So it's just, it feels a little weird, you know, it's not like Star Trek-y in any way, but the music is amazing, and they got the whole voice cast to do it, including, you know, wipe a tear, Anton Yelchin. Uh-huh. I was a little sad to see him again. So for that aspect of it, it's actually very
now,
interesting.
Now, is old Spock on New Vulcan?
I believe they reference him. I don't think he's actually a character in the game or anything like
Someone
that.
Someone gonna get Namor.
Surok is in the game, though, so that's interesting as well.
It's one letter different from Spock. It's pretty much the same
thing. Yeah, they're
basically
the same. But what about you guys? Anything going on in your Trek lives this week or recently?
I've been focusing a little more on the other franchises of my life recently. Actually, a little more on Star Wars.
Yeah, but see, I've also been other franchising as well. Babylon 5 and.
Oh my goodness! Who are you people?
But I mean, this is my first podcast, and I'm totally dedicated to this podcast and this franchise. I mean, I don't have any other podcast about any other franchise besides this one.
Uh-huh. Yet. And the moon, apparently. And the moon.
Well, the moon. All right, the moon is on it's equinoxing right now, so it's it'll be back in a little bit. I'm thinking Goodnight Moon is probably going to shift to a once a month, just as time and children's recording schedules align.
I was going to say, I imagine your daughter she's very busy, and maybe, you know, maybe it's just
these naps won't take themselves, guys. You don't even realize the amount of time we dedicate to this.
By the way, you should definitely listen to that podcast. It's so cute. It's just cute overload. Anyways, but all right, fine. Nobody else has been doing anything Star Trek-y, guys. I guess I'll just move along. Like
I mean, I looked
happened.
At my Eagle Moss ship sitting on my desk a lot yesterday because it was cool. If that counts, maybe.
No, my Star Trek rewatch took a little bit of a pause this week because Iron Fist came out, and
We are the ones jumping ship on franchises.
Rewatch. I'm still playing Star Trek, so there's something Star Trek-y related.
We had recently been talking a lot about past tense on Deep Space Nine, and so I forced my fiance to watch parts one and two.
What did she think of it?
At different sittings, so that was nice to watch it again.
What did she think of it?
I think she was watching most of it while she was on her phone.
Of it watching it again?
That's probably the one. We talked about how oppression and how, you know, I think it's because, you know, it's the episode ends, how did the 21st century get so bad? I don't know, doctor. I just don't know.
Why are you looking into the camera?
You can never not accuse Star Trek of being melodramatic. You can't.
Only way it could be even better is if it ended like The Lorax, where he looks right in the camera and he's like, if people don't care a whole awful lot, it's not going to get better. No, it's not. You know, and it's just. And it's like, Sko, who are you talking to? One to beam up. One to beam up. What are you? And then it's like roll credits.
We'd do an episode on that. Maybe that'll be my next topic because, we're not going to get into politics severely on this show. There are political things to talk about, very interesting things to say, but to talk about the politics of the day, I don't know, it just seems a little... I don't know, not really what we're trying to do.
Only when it perfectly lines up with Star Trek episodes. Right, but it's totally worth it.
Maybe if there was like a bright orange catalyst or something to talk about. I don't know. We'll figure that out when we get there. Anyways, guys, let's move on. Let's actually talk about our topic today. I've been going through the archetypes of Star Trek, and we've made it to the head honcho, the main guy or girl, the big chair, as it were. We're going to be talking about the captains of Star Trek. Now, I can't think of another series, franchise situation where the most coveted position is the comfiest chair. You guys can think of anything like that? I'm not sure.
I'm loving this, Daniel, because you're totally channeling your LeVar Burton reading rainbow voice right now. Today, we're going to be talking about the captains.
To be fair, he was a captain.
He was before Harry Kim took that away from him. we'll get to that. But I mean, yeah, comfy chair. I mean, heck, Worf doesn't get a chair. Rank does have its.
And he doesn't get to be captain either.
Ambassador. I guess he maybe gets his own ship. I don't know.
No, because Captain Sisko says
he never.
Because Captain Sisko says he won't be a captain anymore because he. Save Jadzia and let the scout die. Okay. And so he's like, Mr. Worf, you'll never have a comfy chair.
That is... I like how Sisko developed a kind of...
I mean, Sisko flies the station from behind a desk, so, I mean, he's not really one to talk.
That punishment is so weird to me. Like, first of all, you don't have the authority to grant that punishment to me. Like, you're not my permanent... Whatever.
I'll just go transfer under Jellicoe. I bet you he'll give me a captaincy.
That's not your position.
Oh, Sisko. You're not the only captain in town. Let me see who else I have on my short list of who to call here.
That's funny, because when you were captain and you, I don't know, like, radioactively bombed that planet trying to get the Maquis, they sure didn't take your captaincy away for that, if we want to be pointing fingers.
So, I mean, obviously, especially to Star Trek fans, the captaincy, the captain's chair, and it's, I mean, you know, credit where credit is due. This belongs to Kirk. I mean, Kirk, the and we're not even focusing on Kirk right now, but I'm just as like the origins of this is like, this is why we love the captain is because of Kirk and because of how and what it is that represents. Of course, it goes beyond Kirk.
The spinny chair. We'll talk, I mean, that's
the spinny chair is very significant. Yeah. Yeah.
The center seat.
But his,
I mean, look at the girth of that chair compared to like,
he had all
little,
the buttons on it.
The little stools on the rest of the bridge where you could just fall off if, you know. But
heard that it's
two Kirks in that. Well, one Kirk by season three, but
ooh, All right, well, okay. So, I mean, let's just jump right in then. Let's talk the first cap.
Oh, gosh, no. We're talking about Kirk, your lord.
We will talk. We will get back to Kirk, I promise. Oh, okay. But we will talk first chronology, first chronologically, excuse me, and we will talk Archer. Look, until...
I mean, Zefren Cochrane was really the first captain of the Phoenix. I mean, if you really want to talk about...
Consider...
No, I don't. The, well, not at all.
He
no,
was the pilot. I think Commander Riker was actually...
The ranking Federation officer.
Get out of your chair and get into a historically significant starship. No, I don't...
But no, so Archer. So he's, I mean, he's the first captain. He had to beat out AGJGGR to become the captain.
That's good. I like that. That is now officially his name on the show. Is AGGR? I can't remember.
Who shot JR? Wait, was this that an odd Enterprise?
JP. I was trying to fast take it with her, JP. But we know
an old man's fantasy. The Enterprise.
But you know he's got a difficult job because he's. You know, he's feeling out the position. I mean, not that there hasn't been captains of ships before. I mean, since before time began. But for starships, for what the Federation is
Jack Sparrow,
at that time,
for example?
You may have heard of him.
I haven't heard of him. You know, it's...
But you have heard of him.
Captain Jack Harkness. You know, these are all...
Oh, there we go. There we go. All right, we're going to literally give as many captain references as we can this episode. Captain Crunch.
Kangaroo. Planet. Captain Planet.
Oh, my God. Captain Planet is great. We're about to see a...
He doesn't, see, when he needs to go into an away mission, he just splits into five people, five times the efficiency.
But he doesn't have a chair to sit in, so I really feel like...
But he has the power of love.
Yeah.
Heart.
Yeah, heart.
Heart. Oh, God, you're right. I'm
cardiopulmonary
sorry.
Systems are very important to the Earth.
Anyways.
Captain Archer.
Back.
Yes.
Archer. Archer is interesting because we always assume that Kirk was the first. You know, for a long time, Star Trek fans thought Kirk was not the first. Of course, we knew just from the pilot there were others. But to think that he was...
Captain of the Enterprise. Captain of the Starship Enterprise.
Exactly. Yeah. Think that there was this whole history before him. You know, that's what happens when you take just a snapshot, this little piece of what you see, and you don't contextualize it in any way. So, but imagine, for any other thing that you want to blame Enterprise for, think of actually being the first person in charge of a large group of people going into space exploring the unknown. I mean, if Enterprise did nothing else, it did that. And I think it did it pretty well. You know, of course, very famously in the second episode where Archer, like, transmits the GPS coordinates of where his dog lives and stuff. And he's like, oh, come visit us. And it's like, no big deal. You know, he's so naive. And it's so it's interesting to think about. There was a time, there was a person, there was an event where they went, we went out into space, just like boldly going. That's what we were doing. And somebody had to start it. Somebody had to set the precedent and maybe Archer was it.
And I just feel like with Archer, you know, cause there's also the many roles that a captain plays, you know, diplomat, explorer, scientist isn't necessarily a role, but it's kind of a role. You know, leader of the actual crew, all those things. And I mean, Archer, I feel like, you know, if you had his Marvel card that you turned over and, you know, his power levels,
what his stats were.
Yeah. I feel like explorer and diplomat would be high.
I mean, he's the one making the call. When it comes down to it, he makes the decisions. I mean, Travis Mayweather learned the hard way. Like, it looks a lot different in that chair.
And just pilot straight into the ion storm. I mean, I know that sounds like an idiotic suggestion. But when Captain Archer tells you...
But I have faith of my heart that you are going to be able to pilot us through that ion storm.
All we're doing is polarizing the hull. There's literally no protection that we have, but okay.
Well, that is protection back in the day, Philip. Okay.
Yeah, it's
kind of like...
It's well.
Anyways, so let's also talk... something I want to focus on, too, here in this episode is let's talk about his actually Captain... his captain's style. Like, if you were in the early 22nd century, no, God, I can't remember the timeline, but if you know where I'm talking about, if you were, it was the 20s.
The 22nd century, it's the 2100s.
2160, whatever it was. Sure. If you were at that time, or even at any time, do you think, would you like to be under Captain Archer in a completely platonic way? Would you want to be a subordinate to Captain Archer? Do you think he's a good captain? Do you think he's a good leader? Do you think that he exhibits the qualities? I mean, remember, there's a very famous story of Scott Bakula when he was approached to do the show. And they said, hey, we're doing another Star Trek show. We'd like you to be the captain. And he goes, well, I don't have any interest in that. It's been done before. And what can I do that's different? And then they said, but you're going to be the captain, the first captain, the captain before Kirk. And, and then he said, yes, he jumped on board after that. And, you know, that's an interesting mentality for him as an actor and as an artistic endeavor. But what about, like, the character itself? Do you guys have any appreciation for him? In any, like, what would you say that he excels at above all of the other captains that we see?
I mean, I think he's
got a dog, which is awesome. But the sort of, so does Janeway.
Right. I think he's accessible, right? Like, he'll invite you to dinner. You know, he'll get to know you. Unless you're a crewman, and then he's not going to get to know you unless you travel in time with him. Otherwise, he's not going to know your name. But I think he's, you know, if you saw him walking down the ship, you could say hi and maybe get into a discussion with him, right? He's open, accessible. I don't know. I just feel like you would probably get killed under his command. It's a very dangerous time in Starfleet, you know. That would be my only, especially there's a Zindi war going on. It's just dangerous.
Yeah, he does get a lot of firsts, and it's not a terrible style. It's just a more dangerous time. I mean, the Enterprise NX-01 is not very equipped as far as like weapons or shields, and you know, it's very, I mean, the fact that they actually come on, you know, go through their mission without being utterly destroyed in the main timeline, at least, you know, that's quite a thing. But Archer does, I think he is one of the more celebrated captains though in Federation history. I mean, his actions in the Zindi War and in the foundation of the Federation, like I feel of all the captains, you know, I mean, Kirk is definitely up there, but it feels like Archer is kind of one of those where history books really favored him.
Well, to me, and again, I'm not saying I don't like Archer, but I think his strength is in his alien dealings, like his work with the Andorians, with the insult people. Pig.
Yeah, I know what you mean. The one where he has to cut the log.
No. No.
He's the pig. The pig people from.
Oh. Tellarites.
Tellarites.
Come on, people,
yes,
work with me.
Relax.
His work with the Tellarites, the Andorians, and then creating the alliance with the Romulan threat and all that. So, like, I feel like as Federation president, which I guess is, you know, canon because we see it on screen, I think, enough something. That would be, to me, what makes him so great. So, like, Starship Captain, was that his best time? I mean, that was his best time when he met all the aliens and helped build the alliance that became the Federation. But, you know, I think he maybe is a better politician, I say that in a good way, and diplomat than Starship Captain.
Well, fair enough. Then let's go and move on to the captain. I mean,
well,
you know, wait, are we saying they're all the captain? Because so far we've said that about every
captain.
The captain.
Is it like the doctor where they just...
It is. It's the point. Yeah, that's the point. That every captain that we come across in Star Trek and in the past and present and even in the future, you know, the position demands respect. And hopefully we will give respect to all of them here. But, you know, the captain, the start of the captains... the OG captain, if you will. We're talking Captain Kirk. And Captain Kirk, of course, has become almost a parody of his own self. So this will be interesting to kind of unwrap how we feel about the captain, what his role was, and some of his actions that he took. But, you know, first thoughts, initial impressions on Captain James R?
Q?
Oh, I'm sorry. James T.
Yes.
Yeah, James T. Kirk.
Okay. Mr. Yep. Pickard?
No. Well, you know, I think there's a level of competence to him. I mean, like, he is the captain. I know that sounds so silly, but, like, even when you're watching TOS, like, everyone buys that he knows what's going on. I mean, sure, McCoy will yell at him, and Spock will side-eye him, but, like, they're all going to do what he says, even if they argue with him. And that he, because it does strike me that he doesn't seem young, but he is super is. Like, when you compare to all the other Starfleet captains, but that doesn't bother me. Like, I buy that. I buy that he is the captain and that he's surrounded by these, you know, people that are maybe smarter and maybe older and wiser. But, like, that's what a captain does. He surrounds himself with smart people. And so I totally buy that he is Mr. Captain.
You know, it is the distinction between, I think, the original version of Captain Kirk and the JJ version of Captain Kirk, right? I mean, obviously things are exaggerated and he's hyper young in the JJ in the the Kelvin timeline. But you don't even think that William Shatner was like 32 or something when I can't even remember how old he was when that show first came out. Maybe he was older than that. I don't remember. How old was he? Hold on. Break time.
Don't worry, I'll be sure to keep this part in.
Go ahead. That's fine. Let's see. 1931 to 1963. 35. Okay. So William Shatner was 35 years old.
And that is super young, guys. I mean, I think even if you were like a year or two older than that, that would also mean you're super young.
I mean, basically he could just run for president.
Right.
So, I mean, that is pretty, and especially, you know, later on in the 24th century, of course, different times, but, you know, older captains, generally speaking, still impressive, impressive stuff. And you don't ever think of his age. Honestly, if you watch TOS, his age never comes into it until, you know, the show makes it an issue. You know, when the movies and stuff happen, like, oh, by the way, did you know how old Captain Kirk was? Not a big deal. But
I think it's funny,
yeah,
because by the time, you know, he's old, he's age appropriate. But it's like, oh my God, right, he's so old. I'm like, I think he's reached normal age for.
Right.
He's essentially the same age that, and I don't know canonically if this is true, but roughly the same age that Picard is when we first meet him on TNG.
And like Star Trek 2, they're like, oh my God, Kirk's super old. Let's get his casket, guys. Black funeral and crepe paper.
But either way, I mean, age notwithstanding, Captain Kirk exhibits a lot of the characteristics we would kind of associate with Star Trek captains, right? He's boldly
going.
You know, he's boldly going. he's smart. He's thoughtful. He's compassionate but tough when necessary. I mean, the characteristics of Captain Kirk are pretty outstanding. And you know, and
he gambles,
you know,
but he also only gambles when he knows that the ship can take it or that the crew can take it. You know, like there are definitely risks. Like he's not the Federation's totally safe and everything's, you know,
risk
plush and cushy.
Is why we're here.
Exactly. Exactly. Benjamin Sisko. Sorry.
Because, I mean, you know, this is obviously the stereotype, but it's true that he is a man of action, a captain of action. And that sometimes works and it sometimes doesn't work. I don't think he's overly, you know, just running in there without a plan, which I think might be more J.J. Kirk. But I think with Prime Kirk, you know, he is still a professional. He still has his experience, even though it may not be a lot in years. But he's even though being so young, he has that gravitas that you believe, like, okay, he's young, but he's seen some stuff. He knows what's going on here.
He's ambitious as well. I mean, you know, to be that young and to fit that comfortably in that well, in that role is, I think, speaks volumes about his character. Of course, he's not a perfect character by any means, and none of us are suggesting that. Plenty of character flaws of Captain Kirk are exposed throughout the original series. But, you know, he's such a beloved character for so many reasons. And I think that he embodies this kind of cowboy diplomacy, maybe, if you will. You know, this character, this kind of, you know, free-going, takes himself only as seriously as he needs to, but also is deadly serious when is necessary. I like the Captain Kirk character a lot, and I think he's a very important archetype for what we understand as Star Trek captains now, and even into the future. I'm sure he will have a huge influence.
Right, he's self-righteous isn't the word, but he believes that he's always in the right, which I guess technically you could say they all do, but to me, like, he's like super, like, whatever we're doing, whether that's we the Federation, we Starfleet, we whatever, it's super right. And so I think the episodes where he is shown to be wrong, or, you know, the Horda are our friends, or you know, whatever, I think those are the most interesting episodes where he has to take a step back or whatever.
You know, all I could think of when you said the Horda are our friends, mm-hmm. are the sharks from Finding Nemo.
Horda are friends, not food.
Friends, not food. That would be really funny. Anyways, Darren, you have anything to say about Jim. Damn it,
Jim. No, I think, again, being the actual first captain we see portrayed, I mean, it becomes the tone that you base everything else off of. I mean, I know we'll get to Picard shortly, but, I mean, Picard wouldn't have been written as he was if it wasn't for Captain Kirk. So everything stems off of him as a character. But no, it's, I think, especially being that there's only, you know, so few episodes of TOS, I think it's really important to view his role and his character as a whole, because really I feel, and maybe this is because his character's been around the longest, you know, 50 plus years, give or take, I'm pretty sure. But I think his is the most
human.
No, not human. But where culture has personified of what it actually is. Meaning, you know, when you do a Captain Kirk, you know, impersonation, you're more spoofing it than anything. Like, he's actually a fairly deep character. He actually makes big decisions, but it's been around so long that people have kind of distilled that down to almost a caricature of what the actual character is, with, you know, the broken mannerisms, or, you know, just how he talks, or what he says. But really, if you give the character its due and watch the episodes, you know, that feature his command style, it's actually a really good character. I mean, if it wasn't, you know, Star Trek wouldn't do well.
And I think of all the captains, his belief is most in being a captain. You know, in other words, like, Archer believes in exploring, and, you know, that's why he's out there. I think Kirk believes in exploring too, but, like, he wants to be the captain. And I don't know if that's, it's somewhat power hungry, I guess, but I don't really mean it that way. Because, I mean, even if you go into the movies, what keeps happening? He keeps trying to go away and snaps back to just wanting to be the captain. Like, it's not like he wants to be a diplomat. He wants to increase knowledge. He wants to, you know, all these science, or, you know, he just wants to be the captain. That's what he wants to be. And that's, so I think that's why he's always like the captain, because it's not about anything bigger than that necessarily, both for good or ill.
And, you know, I as a Kelvin verse, I wouldn't say apologist. I don't think I would consider myself that. But as a fan, at least, we should just briefly mention the Kelvin version of Captain Kirk, who is
spoiled brat.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know if I'd even say that. Less. Oh man, we could get into this whole topic, but he's less understanding, less worldly. He's less thoughtful than the original Captain Kirk is. I feel like, and I actually think that's kind of a strong point of the writing, is that he should be, because he lived without his father who didn't guide him that same way.
And moms suck. Am I right?
Well, not moms. Well, but who knows what the law... Anyways, we're not going to turn this into... We can talk about that, definitely. That's a whole topic that would be fun to talk about.
Well, I would say that I think there's... And I only saw it once. And that's not in a bad way. But I only saw Beyond. And I think we certainly do get a more measured Kirk. A more... I don't know what would be the right adjective there. Not weary, though I suppose that might be a good adjective as well. But... You know, he might be ready to get off the Captain Carousel here, and
Captain Carousel.
Yeah, so I think that's an interesting movie for Kelvin Kirk.
Kelvin Kirk, is that James K. Kirk for Kelvin?
Yeah, there you go. There's an interesting thing. There's an interesting difference between the two versions of Kirks, and I think a lot of it was more well thought out than people give it credit for, but that's okay. We don't have to get into it too much because there's not too much of him, unfortunately. And I am in the camp that, whatever, that is a whole nother subject. We won't get into it, but let's talk about the next captain. And guys, we're going to have to be judicious with our time here, because we could probably talk quite a bit about Captain Jean-Luc Picard, but I don't know, Darren, you like him or what? Think he's an okay guy?
You know, he'd be in my top one. Yeah, definitely. But no, I mean, we've talked many times about Captain Picard, just his style, again, being the follow-up to Kirk. I mean, how do you portray a new captain but still feel like, you know, a Federation captain should be? You know, I think they did a good job balancing between him and Riker and some of the other, you know, main bridge staff, shifting kind of the essence of Kirk into multiple people, Horcruxes, as you would, but and then
is that why Picard lives forever? Because no one has destroyed Riker. They destroyed Data. Spoilers. But they still have a few more before they.
The Data Horcrux, the Riker Horcrux, and the Picard Horcrux. They split Kirk's whole soul into three people. Pretty sure, but no, it's. And that part was the part where, you know, the Miri episode. That's why Picard doesn't like children. Anyway, I love his style. I to answer your question that I know you're going to ask, like, would you want to serve under Captain Picard? Yes, I think of all the captains, Captain Picard would be the one I'd want to serve under.
Yeah, see, to me, the answer is yes, but Picard tests people, and so. That's not an easy yes. That's a yes you're going to have to earn. Because I feel like he is probably the most challenging captain to serve under. He expects a lot. You're going to have to earn being there on his ship, whether it's, you know, the falling apart Stargazer or the flagship Enterprise. And that he has, it could be considered a confrontational style. Obviously, he's not going to be like Archer or Kirk, who are approachable in many ways. Archer because of his personality, maybe Kirk because of his age. But Picard's going to be like, no, I'm the captain, and I don't know why you're talking to me and or maintaining eye contact. But of course, that's a barrier he creates, so that you're going to have to show that you're hyper-competent, that you're hyper-capable in order to you know, get to the next step of the Picard relationship.
In that way, he, you know, you were just mentioning before, Philip, that you consider Kirk to have that explorer type attitude, and he is the captain. And I agree with the sentiment that you were just saying. Picard, I think, has such a respect for, I would almost say even too much, possibly, but for that position. That's why he creates those barriers. Like he sees the chain of command as necessary. And something that's super important, and he creates those barriers. And of course, throughout the series, I mean, the ultimate lesson that Picard learns in the show is to break down those barriers. But it's also an important line of respect that he has constructed around him. And, you know, of course, everything you can be that is good can be taken too far. And it's just really interesting to see those kind of two conflicting ideas, you know?
I mean, it kind of, we were talking earlier about The West Wing. It does remind me, for those who watch that, of like,
which you should,
of like being with the president, like, you know, on his staff, like you could joke with President Bartlett, but there's a line and you don't cross that. And yeah, you don't ever yell, like, as Josh found out, you know, when he sort of had his crazy, you know, moment or PTSD moment, where he was sort of like, you know, yelled at the president, because you can't do that. So you don't yell at Captain Picard. You don't cross that line, or else, you know, Riker takes you out slowly out the door and, you know, Shelby's you or something. But I think that is, again, yeah, Picard. But see, I think the thing about Picard, like you said, he is super respectful. But like Kirk, I think he likes being captain, Picard does, but I think he likes what he's, the principles of the Federation. That's why he's there. You know, whether that's being a captain or, you know, archaeologist or ambassador or admiral, I think he could take it and leave it. Now, I think at the end of the day, he learns the best place to be is in the captain's chair. But I don't think he's...
Who would you, just out of curiosity, if you had to theorize who might have taught him that lesson... Is there anybody off the top of your head? Was it Jellicoe that helped him kind of come to terms with that? No, I when I see Picard, I think he is the person that is most comfortable not being captain of all of the other captains.
I mean, he, like, totally he let the... Riker be captain for at least 3/4 of the show. So
I just, you know, it's you hit the nail on the head when you say that. You know, that's not, he's out there for other reasons. I mean, I think he is out there to explore and, but he goes out there because he believes in the values of the Federation. He's not necessarily the guy that needs to be the first to, you know, whatever. I just, you know, Archer, Kirk, even Sisko and Janeway, they mean, like, they're, I don't know. I see Admiral Picard before I see Admiral Janeway. And I don't see any, I don't see Picard having any problems being Admiral Picard.
Well,
even though, of course, generations may have tried to teach us a different lesson.
Right. Well, they literally broke his chair, so.
They did.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is obviously is literally not his first rodeo. Not literally, because it's not a rodeo, it's a captain's chair. But, you know, he was captain of the Stargazer. And so this is the first time meeting a captain who they've been a captain before. You know, the Archer, this was his first command. Kirk, this was his first command. Picard, this is like his second. You know, he's like, I've done this before. So I'm pretty good with this stuff. So we sort of do get the elder statesman, which is a different... refresh, even if you're going chronologically, or even, you know, other chronologically, it's no more the young man first timer, it's the older statesman.
So there's been a lot of kind of analyzation of this sort of thing, and the idea was Roddenberry in the 60s wrote Roddenberry in the 60s as the captain. He wrote Kirk, who was brash and maybe into ladies quite a significant amount and ready to go forward with all sorts of things. And then, of course, there was a Roddenberry in the 80s when he wrote Picard, and maybe a little more measured and a little more wizened and a little more
seasoned,
perhaps, which is a terrible thing to say to a captain, I hear. So it's interesting. It's really interesting to see that those conflicting kind of positions. And then, of course, we got Generations, which I was about to say in the hands of a competent writer.
Ow.
But ooh, Ron Moore helped write that script. I don't know what... we won't get into it. You know, anyways, that's not the point. We've talked about Picard now, guys, for a while. Let's move on. And let's talk about the only captain that didn't get to be captain.
Yeah, that's...
At least right away.
Well, because you don't understand. In the dynamics of the Federation, if you are a captain, you get a ship. If it's not a ship, no captain. I'm sorry.
Is that how it works?
No.
Apparently.
I mean, Deep Space Nine is significantly larger than any ship that we had seen.
How
before.
Fast does it move? What's its zero to warp nine rate?
Well, you know what? I tell you, the amount of time it takes to get from the Denebian cluster to Bajor if that's how we're measuring things, it made that run in the at least 2 parsecs.
Nice. So yeah, you know, we can actually talk about that. That is actually a significant part of the Sisko character, is the fact that he kind of starts at a lower level than the rest of our captains, which is unfortunate for many, many reasons.
Yes.
But do we want to start there, or do you guys have anything else to say that you want to?
I like this. Let's literally do it. Let's literally talk about the captains only. So screw the first 2 seasons. So Captain Sisko.
When he gets a ship, is it like I'm saying, guys.
Yeah. I think that was an interesting experience because, you know, he is, if not in age, at least in rank, a young captain. He's the youngest captain we've ever seen. We've never seen them, you know, put the rank on the person on the show that you're now captain.
You mean, you know, youngest as in, like, amount of time he's been a captain?
Yes.
Okay. He's the freshest captain.
Yes. Which, you know, much like a seafood restaurant, it's the best kind there is.
Well, I mean, are Creole seafood? I don't know if I would call it that, but no. Sisko has a lot. I mean, he has kind of the most complicated backstory that we... Oh, yeah. By far the most complicated backstory that we get. For better or worse.
See,
yeah,
see the retcon.
See the retcon episode. But, of course, you know, he's got family. That become a very important part of the show that we don't get in any other Star Trek. He's got this kind of tragic backstory, which is interlinked with another one of the captains, obviously. Sisko comes in with a lot of baggage and has to deal with a really complicated situation.
His name is Jake Daniel, and I'd like you to respect him.
Sisko is in a very unique position, and it's really interesting to kind of contrast them with the rest of the captains. But what do you guys think? Generally speaking of Captain Sisko, if we're going to just do Captain Sisko, we will include, of course, the Commander Sisko years as well. How do you feel about Sisko as a captain?
I mean, I feel pretty much the same. I mean, it's not like he really changed a lot in getting that rank.
Have you looked at his hair?
Okay, well,
or his face.
Uniform?
But I'd say, you know, I don't know, it is strange again why they chose to do this. Like, why not make him a captain from the get-go? There's really no good reason.
Yeah, let's.
No, it seems weird, doesn't it? I don't know the official writer's reason for why they chose to do it this way, but I mean, okay, so here we have this man who was married, had a kid. He was a Starfleet officer who was married and had a kid. Entered into this dangerous service and brought his children and family on board, which we apparently learned from Emissary. Bad idea. Mm-hmm. Not a great decision, Starfleet. I mean, maybe it's okay on the Enterprise sometimes, but maybe if the Enterprise's captain is coming at you, maybe not such a great idea. Sisko is just in such a... I don't know. I really have a respect, a profound respect and understanding of Captain Sisko's position. I don't really separate them from Commander and Captain, but okay. Let's put it this way. We talked about Kirk, Archer, and Picard being explorers. I don't think of Sisko as an explorer. I mean, I think he
there's literally
the
an episode called Explorers. But I mean,
I
know
I think
what you're
he holds. I think he holds the values of exploration dear to his heart. I think they are important to him. But that's not an important part of his life. And that's just the nature of the show. There's nothing wrong
with
that.
He's there to explore the Bajoran culture, Daniel.
Of all cultures. Okay, I've talked for a while. So somebody else take over. Talk about Sisko.
Well, like you said, I mean, I think he is the first family man captain we see. And that is, again, I mean, that is a great part to his character. And I think Certainly we should see more of that, hopefully, in the future, not to be the lonely person at the top always, because I think I'd enjoy that, but it, at this point it is overplayed. We need to show someone who's capable of having a family and doing all that. And not just always being these tragic figures, you know, who lost their parents or, you know, whatever.
He's not Batman, okay?
Yeah,
Uncle Ben!
Yeah, I know. And so, but I think with Cisco, and of course you have him, you know, falling in love and getting married and all these very human things and building a life on a new planet. Well, not new, new to him. You know, it's like getting a car. It's not a new car. It's new to you. That is Planet Bajor. But it's basically, it's like a 2000.
It still kind of smells funny, you know.
It's like a 2005 Ford Taurus. That is Bajor. I feel like him having his two hats, well, three, one's a baseball hat. But, you know, he has his Deep Space Nine hat and he has his Defiant hat. And because it's cocked at an angle, so it's Defiant. But I feel like those are two different sort of parts. I mean, you can be commander of the station, which is whatever that means. I mean, I say that in a good way because there's so much things when you say commander of the station, commander of the strategic position of the wormhole, of protecting Bajor, of when the Dominion War starts, and all that's, you know, military commander, military governor. I mean, I'm sure they don't use the words military. But then you sort of have captain of the Defiant, you know, the warrior shuttle, and, you know, the role that he plays there. And he actually gets to be a. What is he? What role does he play? Like in a bizarre, like they try to play with it and then they forget about it. Where like they he gets assigned to be the Admiral Ross's like attaché or
because he doesn't have the station. So like, what is he gonna do?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't remember the role either, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's like staff officer, really. But anyway, so I think he does a lot. I think he does probably, you know, more than maybe some of the other characters or captains, you could say. He there's a lot he has to go through.
You know, and I do actually want to emphasize his role as a father is super significant for a lot of different reasons. But I mean, just the fact that we have never seen a captain with a family life. I mean, literally, what Kirk has a brother and a nephew, and that didn't go so well. You know, Picard had a brother and a nephew. That didn't really go so fantastic. Janeway gets a Dear Jane letter. I don't really know if she has any siblings, but her father's already passed, and I don't know anything about her mother. Anyways, Archer, his father's dead. And, you know, all these people
are
kind of loners.
Well, he has daddy issues.
He does have daddy issues. Which is actually very surprising in Hollywood. It seems to be kind of rare. No, obviously kidding. But Sisko is like, I mean, he's a real person and he has this real relationship with his son and it's a really beautiful relationship. I mean, it's really amazing. And, you know, like this is not the relationship that I have with my father at all, but they're very touchy feely. And like, this is very kind of a new agey love first relationship in the '90s and in space on the space spaceship. It was just a really positive way of portraying family in this universe that kind of treats your coworkers as family and sometimes kind of forget that maybe you have family who is also family.
He does have nicknames for people. He has old man, he has constable.
And of course, I mean, really, yeah, if we want to expand it between Jake, Benjamin, and oh my goodness, I'm not going to remember his father's name.
Oh.
What is his
Cartwright?
No.
No. Stop it, Darren.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, what is
Grandpa?
Because they never call him by his name. He calls him Dad. He doesn't.
No, they do, but I can't remember it.
I mean, I'm sure they do in the show, but I can't remember Sisko calling him father. Papa Sisko. So you have Papa Sisko, medium.
Hey there,
Sisko.
Papo.
Anyways, it's a really lovely exploration of fathers and sons and grandchildren and all of that. And very intimate, very, very personal kind of relationships that Sisko develops.
Joseph Sisko.
Joseph, of course. I cannot
Good,
believe it.
Strong name there.
Joseph.
And we won't get into the mother. I mean, that's a whole nother.
Jennifer.
Yes, we won't get into it. I hope it's not Jennifer. That would make family picnics pretty awkward. But anyways, all right, let's move on. We've talked a bit about Sisko, and we'll move on to Janeway, Captain
it's
Janeway.
Another J. Yeah. It's not that hard, Daniel.
It is. The only female, of course, in the major series captains that we've known, Captain Catherine Janeway. And she is put in quite a predicament in the first episode. So how do you guys think that she fits?
Is that how you define the whole series? Yes, Voyager gets caught in the Delta Quadrant. Quite a sticky wicket for the Voyager.
It sounds like you're writing the Netflix like bio for this series. You know, Voyager gets stuck in an unlikely predicament for 7 years.
Voyager finds himself in a bit of an awkward situation.
I feel like she gets back to the Federation and she's like giving a tour or a lecture or something, and someone's like, "What would you say would be the defining action of your captaincy?" She's like, getting stuck in the Delta Quadrant for 7 years, you know. But no, I think Janeway is a great captain. I think it was nice because, one, she had a singular focus. I mean, not that exploration isn't singular, but, you know, having that through line of needing to, you know, get home, and but also, you know, keep her crew intact. And also, you know, we know that she was a blue shirt, you know, and moved over into the reds.
Blue shirts are the best shirts. I'm glad you mentioned it.
I'd still think, we'll talk about command structure politics later. But, you know, there's that aspect to her character. There's, you know, pretty much having to operate without resources. Not since Archer have we seen a captain who has had so few external resources to rely on. And her ship's way more complex than the XO-1. Like, at least it could land. But, you know, who knows if it's going to take off again, you know. But, you know, I mean, I think Janeway was a great captain. I could see how she became admiral. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
I would like to hear you expand on that, Darren. But I think... No, go ahead. Why do you think that? Why do you think out of all the captains... Well, we did see Kirk becoming.
Well, I could just see her being the most who would want to sit down behind the desk at some point. Mm-hmm. Like, she's kind of, you know, just stay on Earth for a decade or so. You know, she's been out and about and away, you know, for a long time. I could see her wanting to sit down, you know, for a while.
Okay,
but
I can see that.
I mean, and also I think she would make a lot. She's the least likely, I think, to become a bad admiral, notwithstanding what she did in Endgame and, you know, changing time. But, you know,
Nemesis, you're just going to let that go away, Darren?
She didn't really do much in Nemesis.
She set the whole movie up. That's pretty
Lord.
Much.
No, just saying go do this does not mean setting up the whole movie. Praetor Shinzon set up that movie more than anybody. But anyway, I would trust a Federation with her as one of its leaders. I'll put it that way.
Right. Yeah, and I think with Janeway, because she too, this is her. We were led to believe her first command.
Yeah.
And so that's again, we're going from again. Picard is the only leader with experience. So if you're voting experience, vote Picard.
I mean, he lost his ship. So, I mean, track record
and found
wise,
it.
After he had the next ship.
Right. Well, look, the part is you found it, okay? So it's not lost anymore, okay? Technically, you have to now change the historical documents about the Stargazer. It's lost, asterisk, found later. I think with Janeway, because she sort of does have, and again, it doesn't feel like her first command, but it is. And I guess that's a compliment to her. She does seem like, you know, she knows what she's doing or wants how to be a captain. You know, she knows what she wants to do and how to do it. I think she is very passionate. And I know that sounds sort of like I'm gender coding there. But what I mean by that is what I like about Janeway is that she does really good things and really bad things. And to me, that makes her a very interesting character because there are times where I'm like, I do not agree with what you're doing at all. I think you are being obstinate and not listening to anyone, like whether it's Scorpion or whether it's Equinox or whatever it is. I think she's more likely to overrule cautions from her crew than any other captain. But I think that makes her very interesting. And so, like, I cheer for her when she makes these great, cool decisions. And then when she makes these kind of really bad decisions, I'm like, oh, okay. But that's what makes you interesting, you know. And so I think she kind of runs the full gambit. But she's a very strong personality. But I guess she is, you know, as approachable as probably any of the other folks, I would say. You know, which I said Picard wasn't. But I think Janeway is also approachable. Even though she has such a strong personality, I think crew would feel very comfortable walking up to her and saying, you know, these are my concerns or issues.
As long as your crew isn't named Tuvix.
Right.
Certainly.
Right. Well, that was...
Then she murders you in cold blood. No, but seriously, I actually have a huge issue with that, and we need to talk about that someday. Mm-hmm. But I will set that aside, because Janeway is a wonderful captain. And, Much love to the blue shirt captain, the only blue shirt captain, as far as we know, that we get. And,
I mean, Captain Picard was punished to be a blue shirt at that.
Yes. And his crew is also punished to roam the Delta Quadrant, but they found their way back in an episode, but that is neither here nor there. But no, I like Captain Janeway a lot. I really do. Except for that one incident that I mentioned. I do. I really do. And I, you know, she has a tough, tough situation. I mean, I was going to say really they all do, but not really. But she has got a very unique situation where she's out there. I mean, she is out there without any. And I guess other than Archer, nobody has that kind of completely absent support network from their command than Janeway does. And not only does she have a completely absent support network, she couldn't just turn around and go back. I mean, that's essentially what they're trying to do, but it's not easy to do that. It's going to take a long time. And I have a lot of sympathy for her. And she's strong as a captain. She's a very good leader. And she's very open to suggestion. There are some times that she's stubborn, but that comes with command. I don't know. I like Janeway. I don't have really many problems with Janeway. I think she's a really, really great captain. And I hope that any other captains, not even, you know, female or male, but any captains that we have could learn a lot from her, except for Tuvix. But we'll talk about
that.
Wow.
Wow.
A lot of asterisks in that.
I have a big bone to pick with that, but we'll get there.
Is it a flower patterned bone?
Oh.
Well, I would think with Janeway, she is the only cap. Well, okay, I'll rephrase this. All the captains have to embody Starfleet, but she literally has to embody Starfleet. Like, she's Starfleet in the Delta Quadrant. There's no other admiral. There's no other, you know, there's not like you're going to have like the Badmiral or the Federation civilian person or whoever. Or Starfleet Command, or, you know, not until season 6 or whatever it is. Like, she has to be it, and she has to set the standard. And she's the one who, you know, will mete out punishment or rewards for, you know, what it is to be Starfleet. I was going to say forcing the Maquis. It might be a little strong, but I suppose we'll say it. Forcing the Maquis to be Starfleet, and, you know, because she's facing such difficult circumstances, you know, where's the line gonna be? Of course, we have that sort of mirror experience with Equinox and what Captain Ransom does. But I think that is sort of the harder thing that she has to carry on her shoulders.
In love with her first officer. That's gotta be tough, right? I mean, come on.
Oh, well. Lordy.
I mean, look, have you ever seen TOS? I have to say.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, guys. Archer, Kirk, Picard, Sisko, Janeway. And now, Captain Lorca.
Yeah, it does.
Is he captain of the Shih Tzu?
No, well, maybe, because presumably that ship changes names or whatever. We're
which
not
is
sure.
Good, because I can pronounce this is, Discovery, so that helps
this is
me
a,
out.
This is, I assume it's going to be a Enterprise refit to Enterprise A transition, where they just have an extra ship sitting in space dock that you can just take and rename.
We're just about to launch this good old ship.
No, look, they discover an extra thing, and then when it goes to the Shitsu, it powers up to the super starship, which we now call Discovery. I'm telling you guys, get ready.
So all the people...
get ready for Power Rangers. Because
all the people on the bridge, like, power up, Discovery, go! It would be amazing. So yes, the you know we teased it a little bit. Had happened right before recording last week, but Jason Isaacs, fairly well known for playing
villains.
Villains, yeah, for sure. Specifically, Lucius Malfoy.
Captain Hook.
You know, the... Oh, yes. That's right. That's right. He was also in this terrible movie. I just watched this movie really, really, really recently called... something about water. I can't remember. Actually, it was terrible. Water it was World. So terrible. No, it was...
That's a
just
pretty
this...
terrible movie with the word water in it.
Anyways, he was the bad guy in a movie that came out this year about water. And I can't remember what it was called, but it's terrible. Please never watch it. One of the worst movies I've ever seen.
So bad he forgot the title.
I did. Anyways, but Jason Isaacs.
Look,
very rough.
That's water under the bridge.
Ooh, good one. So Jason Isaacs, a fairly recognizable actor. And like you mentioned, Philip, he's kind of known for playing villains, but I can totally see him being a captain.
Is it because he's British and that's how you imagine captains?
It is. It's probably that. I mean, he's white, British. He's got blue eyes. He's a dude.
Wow.
I mean, what is? You know, I tease and I kid.
Are you talking about The Cure for Wellness?
Yes. Oh God. Yes, that movie is awful. Please never watch that movie.
It looks kind of bad.
A PSA for anybody that watches films ever: don't watch A Cure for Wellness. It's awful. But anyways, he's going to be the captain of the Discovery. And I am okay with this.
That we know
I like. Yes, Philip subscribes.
I mean, until
to
we
fans.
See him sit down, do we really know?
He tweeted a picture of the chair.
Yeah.
Of course he's going to sit down.
I also tweeted a picture of the Klingons. I don't have a job anymore, Daniel.
Okay, guys, let's presume then. If they're actually telling us the truth, if Discovery is a real TV show and is actually going to come out in the fall, and Jason Isaacs actually has a job right now. What would we like to see
now,
for Jason Isaacs?
Do we have a hard yes that he is human?
I don't.
You know,
it's not a very British last name. I'm saying for a captain.
I mean, is Isaacs a
yes?
What Denobulan last name?
I mean,
name?
Okay.
Like,
I will.
You say
I will say this.
Point?
I mean, I know IMDb isn't like uneditable. But it does say Captain Lorca under all of the episodes listed.
Oh, it does? Yeah. Okay,
so, you know, it has like it says like 1.1, 1.2, 1.3. It
right.
says his name.
I mean,
name
because
under
after
all.
He dies, it's they early. Actually have his, they do a memorial for him, and he actually is him. And so you actually see him in every episode because...
So there are people, first of all, God, please don't let that be true.
Okay, well, I'll put this. Everyone says 13 episodes, except when you get down about a dozen to like two, there's like three actors or actresses that have two episodes. So it seems like everyone is pretty much going to be in every episode, except for like a couple really minor people.
Also, I mean, presumably the show will be 13 episodes. I mean, that could change. I mean, we're 6 months out from it. It could still even change that. You know, I mean, there could be only 12 episodes or 14 episodes or 11 episodes. So we're just kind of going on the information that we've been given and that we assume, too. There's a lot of kind of presupposing here that's happening. But let's just assume, for fun and for captain's sake, as we're talking about that, that not only is Discovery a reality, an actual TV show that will release at some point in the history of the planet Earth. Let's assume that. That's a big assumption, I know. And let's assume Jason Isaacs as Captain Lorca is going to be the captain of Discovery. Now, there's been plenty of speculation that he may perish fairly early on. Or maybe not. But let's just say Captain Lorca, blank slate, somebody that you can imbue with the powers of all the captains of Star Trek. Come on, guys. Power Rangers is coming out this week. We just talked about Captain Planet. If you were to be like, I am Captain Planet, and you know, everybody had a ring, Kirk, Picard, Archer, Janeway. Like, if you could give them all of the abilities,
hold on.
All of the
who is which one? I'm gonna do this right now.
Gosh.
Oh, okay. All right.
Archer is heart because obvious
Archer's
reasons.
Heart. Archer's heart.
I mean, he's got faith of the heart. Obviously.
Right. Kirk is fire. I feel like that's fair.
Fair. Okay.
Janeway. I'm gonna go with wind.
Okay.
Kind of feels.
She had. Okay.
I can go with it. Earth.
Who's water?
I feel like, okay, this is me. I'm going to say Cisco Earth, and I know it feels like because I'm choosing he's the black guy, but I think Cisco Earth and Picard is water.
Yeah, I could go with that.
Why, though? I mean, I don't disagree, but I'm curious.
Because
if, like,
one's near a planet,
reason?
Which is made of Earth, and I don't know.
Well, I feel like Earth... I mean, given that there's only two left, for one thing, you can either Earth or water, because it's just everyone else. I feel like Cisco's a little more, you know, he's rockier, he's firmer, sure. Where I think Picard is maybe a little bit more fluid, a little more,
what if
principles split out
there. Kirk was wind and Cisco was fire because of, like, the Pa Wraith?
I was going to say give Cisco fire because of the Pa Wraith thing.
But he's not the Pa Wraith. He's the Prophets. Did you guys not see the last episode?
We did. We did, in fact, see it.
I mean, does that mean if we're going to go by how they died, is Kirk going to be Bridge?
Shh! Spoilers! Spoilers!
Which was on a planet of the Earth, obviously, so...
But seriously, like, let's give this guy the best characteristics of every captain. You know? So I'm not going to ask you which characteristic from which captain are you giving this guy, but give him your top three.
I think he supports, obviously I'm pretty sure he's going to support everyone in his command, like, for their development, because especially if he's not going to be the lead, like, he's definitely going to be in that mentor role. So he's going to be a mentor.
Okay.
I'm trying to think, who
are you just going?
Who is the most mentory of? I would say Cisco.
Probably Cisco. Janeway would be up there, though, I think.
Well, there's no way to go up from. Like, I think he he tries to. I think Cisco is preparing all of his people to move up.
And they, I mean, Major Kira advances in rank, and
I mean, I think he
Worf advances
actually,
in
that's
rank.
That's a really interesting. I mean, we can talk about who characteristically has that persuasion, but who has actually had the junior officers promoted more? Now, to be fair, I think Picard has a little bit of a leg up, only because Geordi goes from, like, first year cadet to captain by the end of the series.
And Kirk, for the most part, has a ceiling with his crew. No one ever gets past commander. There is a Sulu exception.
Yeah.
And Spock, but nevertheless.
No, but that's actually really okay. I'm with you, Darren. All right, so he is going to be the mentor captain, which makes a lot of sense because this is the first series in which that we're not following the captain primarily. So totally okay. Well, keep going. You got two more.
Oh man, three from each of us. I would say he is going to be a diplomat if we're insofar that he's not going to let the Federation be taken advantage of. If we're going to be having dealings with the Klingons or Romulans or Vulcans or whatever.
Are there Klingons in this show?
You know, I think there might be one or eight, but I don't know what the relationship's going to be, but I know that he is going to defend the Federation's interests.
I'm calling it right now. I'm sorry, I just got really excited. I'm just calling it right now. He's a Klingon in disguise, just like not Troubles and Tribulations.
Troubles and Tribbles. Yeah.
Was it Troubles and Tribulations? Yeah, he could be a Klingon. Anyways, but that'd be great. By the way, that'd be a really good callback.
So you're saying
anyways,
at the end of the first episode,
saying
number one comes
eye.
Up with a Tribble, it goes crazy in front of Captain Lorca, and they unmask him Scooby Doo style, and you're like, oh my god, he's a Klingon. And then credits roll, and you're like, oh my god.
Oh, really, Lorca? You thought you were going to trick us with Lorca? No, yeah. That would... because
that actually does
Lorca
sound like
is spelled with a
name.
Q apostrophe A. So I'm just
Lorqua.
Saying, people, come on.
Well, he keeps referring to this as Earth human food. I don't know why he says that. It's really weird. So yeah, so he's a mentor. He's a diplomat, you know, provisionally. But I would also say...
The court will hear your provision.
Provisionally.
Well, you know what I mean. Like, I'm not saying like Picard as the diplomat, but more as insofar as he's going to defend, you know, his ship and their interests. But I also am going to say he's going to be kind of Janeway-esque, kind of an explorer. I think he, you know, again, I don't know the setting. I mean, I know the time period, and that's still kind of a time when the Federation was exploring a lot. I mean, I remember when they used to be explorers.
See, this is, because I'm going to have to, like, sort of stereotype the time period. And so it's sort of the rough and tumble Federation, you know, Klingons everywhere, Romulans hiding behind every planet. And I'm just quoting Janeway. But I feel like he's going to, or he should have, the cowboy diplomacy of Kirk. That, like you said, not just diplomacy of Klingons, but he's going to have to be a strategist, which I think Kirk was very much so. You know, a good tactical thinker. It's going to have to be balance of hair type stuff. And let's see, what other things for Captain Lorca, which I don't like the name. I'm just telling you right now. Unless he's an alien.
You probably wouldn't have liked Picard as an Englishman either, fellow.
Lorca?
But come on,
I've never even... Well, that's a French name for one thing. But shouldn't he be alien? I'm going to throw this out here. What I think he should be alien.
I mean, I think that presumably the next Star Trek captain should be alien. I don't think he will be alien.
Because if he's not the
lead,
isn't the safest bet?
At least have him be born, like,
bet?
Not on Earth. Maybe he was born on the fabled Martian colony or something.
Or in the moon.
Well, they have the best defense systems.
The best.
But...
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course, this is the 23rd century, so, like, what does it even look
he's
like?
He's got
then?
An idea. One day, we will have an amazing defense perimeter.
Well... In the 23rd century, it was just Pond Armstrong, but we don't need to get into that.
Pond Armstrong. That's not how the moon works.
That's not how any of the moon works.
Anyways, Philip, come on. We gotta get here. What do you got? Anything else? Any other characteristics you want to see?
I don't know. See, I almost would want to see all the captain characteristics we've talked about imbued in the rest of the crew, because I think this is a series that is letting everyone shine. Let me see that Picard science officer. Let me see that Cisco type, you know, alien engineer. Let me see those other types that maybe we're going to see folks who are going to be tomorrow's captain. And that's what Discovery will be about.
Which is interesting because I'm not seeing any commanders listed. I'm seeing lieutenant commanders, doctors, an ensign, and a cadet.
Well, remember... I mean, you can only have one commander on a ship at a
but
time.
We don't have any commanders yet.
Oh, yeah?
And to be...
Look at the Klingon rank. Oh, boo.
I don't know.
You know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see another family man. You know, maybe his wife is a, you know, or husband, whatever. Yeah, whatever. Is another.
We've already
officer?
Established. The science officer is gay, Daniel, and that's the only one we're going to have.
You could possibly have two or more. Or, you know, it could be whatever. My point is, I don't care. I'm open to whatever. Have them, you know, be a family person.
Like, just have pictures that their children drew. Like Captain Jellicoe, as much as we want to, you know, make fun of him. But, like, you know, those are his grandchildren, to be sure. Or, well, this is children or grandchildren.
No, I don't know.
Anyway, he had pictures from his kids on his wall.
I'm actually much more interested in the actual relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, Jake and Cisco, but that's not right. Jake and Ben had.
Well, Jake,
that was a
Jake
real relationship.
And the Cisco,
yeah. Jake and the other Cisco. So, Jake was a character, and this other person's family could be characters on the show. Maybe they wouldn't be on the ship. We don't know. depends on the situation, but why not? You know, why not have a recurring character of this is my brother, or this is my wife, or this is my son, or this is my whatever? Why not? There's nothing wrong with that. I'm also interested in seeing, blue shirt. Let's do another blue shirt. Let's get it done.
So I'm been looking over all the casting that we see on IMDb, and it's interesting to note that I'm just trying to framework how things are coming. So everyone has 13 episodes except for the three that I listed that are, you know, alien sounding names, which only their credits are only listing the pilot and the last episode. So I'm feeling kind of like a bookend kind of interesting thing. And Sarek is only the pilot, apparently. Again, it's IMDb. It shifts and changes. So I'm not saying it's locked, but it's just interesting to consider.
Would you guys be open to the idea of Ben Cross, I think is his name? And I could be wrong. Please forgive me. Hang on. I got it real quick.
Are you talking about one of the cast people? Because I'm looking at him right now. I don't see a Ben Cross.
Yes. Would you guys be open to the idea of Ben Cross, who played Sarek in the 2009 film, playing Sarek in Discovery as well? I thought he did really well as Sarek in 2009. And he might have shown up in 2000. I can't remember.
I think he was a great Sarek. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, they could do something else. It doesn't matter.
They are, Daniel. They've cast another completely person.
I was going to say, he's already been casted.
Oh, did?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Oh, it's a very... it's the guy from...
It is James Fran. Frain.
From Gotham.
Frain.
And he was also in Tron Legacy.
Oh, he looks a lot like Ben Cross.
Yeah.
Interesting. As he looks like a lot like young Ben Cross. Interesting. Okay. What was he in Gotham? I only watched half a season of Gotham.
Well, it was second season he played the mayor. Oh, the guy who became mayor.
Tron Legacy, he played Jarvis. I'm trying to remember that character.
That is Iron Man's
robotic. I know that.
He eventually becomes what you would call Vision at that point.
He also was in County Monte Cristo.
Oh, I saw that film. That was a good film. No, he definitely looks Vulcanish. He could definitely be.
I think he looks Romulan.
Well, all right. Do we want to finish this recording? Because we've been going for quite a while. All
right. I think it was finished an hour ago, but yes.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let me get to the end here.
Captains aren't the only thing we've been talking about this.
Yeah, week. Yeah. You know, I'm actually really excited about the captain of Discovery. You know, I know it's not going to be the main character. It's going to be a switch up from what we've known before. But I'm really excited to explore the character in a different way and kind of in a different era, essentially. I mean, 5 years earlier, doesn't really matter. But, you know, it's going to be fun and it'll be interesting. And we'll definitely have a lot to talk about at the very least. So, you know, We've talked a lot about captains, and we will talk a lot about captains in the future. There is no doubt. But you know what? You know, we're going to talk about something different than captains next week. Philip, what are we talking about?
You know, Daniel, what we're talking about, much like the Captain of Discovery, is going to be a surprise.
Oh, all right.
Is it going to be about Sisko being a commander? Like the whole episode about that?
Yeah, we're going to talk about the commanders. Yeah, I know. We're not.
McDuff! Darren, where can people find you online if they want to talk to you about how to become the senior most captain of industry?
Senior most. I'm assistant to the senior most captain of industry. But yes, they can find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi. That's DrSCIFI. Or visit me on drscifi.com, where I have some other podcasts as well.
And Philip, if people wanted to become the senior most captain of Crunch, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, I mean, that's a lot of crunching you've got to do, but I think you can do it, folks. You can find me on Twitter. My handle there is NCPublicServant.
What about you, Daniel? Where can people find you online if they want to talk about captains?
How to be the best Captain Adama.
Wait, guys, we totally skipped ECH. I mean, pivotal. I mean, oh, how those pips come in, like, right. You know, I mean, he's not, we don't see him in the chair very often, but he's very effective in what he does.
All right. And if people wanted to get a hold of me and talk to me about captains, they can get a hold of me on Twitter at OneUpDan. That is the number one, as in nobody beats the captain.
Nobody.
I'm the captain now. Okay. I'm Daniel Prue.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Darren Moser.
Stranded here on SETI Alpha 3.
Come!